Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Well, hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to having a happier, healthier life with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for sharing it with your friends and family. We're over 600,000 listeners here in the States and another 100,000 overseas. So we appreciate you sharing it with your friends and family. Today, we have a very interesting show, something that many of you have been asking about for a long time, and we finally found the right person to talk about it. Everybody's seen the stories about failed crypto empires. Some as a result of mismanagement, malfeasance, people have lost a lot of money. And at the beginning of these new industries, so to speak, there's a lot of the Wild West. But when people start losing money, they get hurt financially, that's when the government regulators step in. So now that the government regulators step in, the question is, what is government regulation and its effects on the broader crypto market and personal finance? Now, we have Peter Eberle. He's the president and chief investment officer of Castle Funds. Besides earning an MBA from a prestigious school called Wharton, he served as the head of trading on the Pacific Exchange for Goldman Sachs. He was a member of the U.S. Equity Derivative Management Committee. Peter is very skilled, experienced, and very accomplished in this marketplace. And Peter, thanks for being here. You know, we've got thousands of people who really want to understand what's going on and what changes and what they mean. So thank you for being part of our show.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It's great to be on with you.
Could you just give us a little overview about one gentleman that they've called his firm a crypto firm, more of a Ponzi scheme? I'm not asking you to go through all that, but there's things that lead regulators to start doing certain things. And I think it's important for our audience to understand what those things are. And then let's talk a little bit more about the regulations that are in place, how it affects taxes, things like that. And then we can go from there, if that's okay.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect jumping off point. I mean, this huge fraud that was perpetrated by the Sam Bankman-Fried with FTX, you know, it's not the first of its kind. Though it happened in crypto, it was a classic Ponzi scheme. Now, we've seen this before, right? We've seen Bernie Madoff, who was a highly respected individual, president of various stock exchanges himself, a pillar of the community, everybody thought, all the while he was running a huge, huge scam, right? And that was in the general securities market, a very highly regulated market. He had the regulators eating out of his hand, essentially, right? But that didn't make stock investing a bad idea for people. It just meant he was a fraudster. Now we've come to this next fraud with FTX, and we can deep dive into this, but they called themselves an exchange, but the way they operated isn't like any exchange that we're familiar with, whether it's a commodities exchange, a stock exchange. It's not an exchange, right? Because exchanges don't hold people's money. And in this case, FTX held people's money, held their crypto assets, and actually inflated how much crypto they had because they were shuffling off that crypto to a sister entity, Alameda Research, a trading firm. And they pretended everybody's crypto and US dollars were on exchange, but they weren't there. So once again, it's a Ponzi scheme. The regulators also, again, love this guy, right? Congress had him testifying in front of Congress, explaining how other people were a systemic risk to the industry and how he was a savior. Again, they cozied up to the wrong person. So it's not surprising that we now have a big push for regulation. And if it's well thought out regulation, then everybody embraces that. Markets grow when they're trustworthy. And if there's doubt of the trustworthiness of an industry, big money's just not coming in.
So yeah, I looked at this as a trust point. The trust point for crypto kind of went out the window with all that stuff because there's a few others besides him. And there's a few other exchanges that have gone bankrupt because they just aren't generating what they think they should generate. when it comes to government regulations, what are we beginning to see?
First of all, I think it's important to define what a traditional exchange looks like. And this is what the SEC's filing against Coinbase has a lot to do with. Take a traditional stock exchange, right? You have your brokerage account. It could be with Merrill Lynch, and I have my brokerage account with Goldman Sachs, right? I happen to want to buy some Amazon stock. You happen to want to sell some Amazon stock. So through our brokers, we send an order down to the trading floor, and those orders get matched. And then overnight, a settlement happens where my broker gives to the clearing firm my money, and your broker gives to the clearing firm your stock, and the switch happens. Right. So all those functions, though, the exchange is only a place that facilitates this trade. They don't handle the money. They don't handle the shares. It's a place for people to meet to make an exchange of money and shares. So we have multiple parties acting as agents protecting you and I, the customer. Right. My guys at Goldman are going to make sure I get the best price. Your guys at Merrill are going to make sure you get the best price. And both those parties hold our funds or our shares and make sure to secure us. And never does an exchange have that. Now, when you have FTX or Coinbase or these other exchanges, they're acting as brokers more than exchanges. They control the exchange, but they also control your account, my account. We have to trust them when they say that they've got your money or your Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. We have to trust that mine are there. But we don't really know that because we can't look into their books. They're doing these multiple functions that naturally some conflicts arise and potential for fraudulent activities. And that is what the SEC really wants to see, is it wants to see an exchange act as an exchange, a broker act as a broker, and to be able to look through and see segregated assets, right, that are not commingled, where you can actually tell the difference if it's Steve's assets or Peter's Bitcoin, and be able to trace that back, and that the assets are there. And doesn't this make sense for all of us? Doesn't it make us all feel better about trading if we have that transparency?
Yes, it definitely would. So there's obviously classic signs. And one of the things that came out with Bernie Madoff was he obviously made up his own statements for everybody. And it was on Madoff and Associates, opposed to Madoff and Associates, but on Merrill Lynch's or Goldman Sachs paperwork. So how can people protect themselves in the crypto industry?
So one of the famous sayings in Bitcoin is not your keys, not your coin, right? So what that means is Bitcoin is unique from stocks or even cash right now in that we can custody the assets ourselves, right? If you have a hardware wallet, you can custody your Bitcoin on that hardware wallet. You can't do that with a stock certificate, right? You actually have to leave that with a brokerage firm. They no longer issue paper stock certificates. You used to be able to custody your own, but you can't now. So sure, you can use a Coinbase to facilitate the transaction and then pull your assets off of that exchange as soon as you're done with that. So within 30 minutes, you should be able to have your assets. You could transfer money on, do your transaction, and then transfer your assets off all within a half an hour. Mm-hmm. So that you risk to the in that exchange is very limited. And then you hold the keys to your own Bitcoin, you custody themselves, or you invest with a fund that does the same thing on your behalf, right? When we transact primarily over the counter because we're a bigger institutional size investment firm. So what we do is we actually transact with known third parties where we interact on what's called the over-the-counter market. And then we settle that right into a third-party custody account where the assets are segregated, they're offline, they're completely safe, immune from hacking, and we get them off. So our on-chain risk or our online risk is counted in seconds because mm-hmm. We take them offline. And that's individual investors can do the same thing. They need some knowledge. They need to learn. And many investors, unfortunately, that got hurt in FTX, they didn't deserve to lose by any means. It was fraudulent, but they also didn't do everything they could to protect themselves out of laziness or out of a lack of knowledge. And so people need that. Now, obviously, the SEC, by getting involved in regulating these exchanges and making them come compliant, that will lessen that risk. But because this account accounts for all cryptocurrencies, because they can be self-custodied, why not self-custody and not be in someone else's hands?
This has been great so far, Peter, but I have to take a break. So, hey, folks, stick with us. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve and Peter Eberle.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we're talking about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. All the replays are available on savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, our Spotify channel, our Apple channel, and check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, E360 TV and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal and financial freedom. Now, I want to welcome Peter back. Peter's been talking about the issues with government regulation, how it affects the crypto market. But now I'd like to really talk about the big appeal behind independent crypto movement. So if you could kind of share what that is and the appeal that people have behind that.
Yeah, so we mentioned before you could self-custody this asset, which makes it very unique in that sense alone. And, you know, most of the people that we deal with are doing a rather small allocation of their total assets to this asset class because it is highly volatile. It hasn't been volatile in the last 2 months, but historically, it's been quite volatile, right? And so having a 5% allocation, if you're very risk tolerant, as high as 10%, but really not normally higher than that, to this asset class can actually give you great diversification effect with a small allocation. And it's a great diversifier. It has unstable correlations to other assets, which gives it more power as diversification. Now, the internet of money is really what Bitcoin, for example, is. I'll mainly speak about Bitcoin because it truly is head and shoulders above the rest right now in market capitalization and adoption and things like that. When you think about, when you're hearing about AI and you're thinking about machines making decisions, some of those decisions that these machines are going to make is contracting with other data providers, other computers for things like data. So you might have a computing model that needs a certain data set and it's going to have permission to buy that data set up to a certain limit. Mm-hmm. Well, it can't transact that in US dollars, for example, but it might be able to transact that with Bitcoin or Ethereum or some other cryptocurrency. And so there's going to be adoption because it is the internet of money and it is digitalized. And so you're going to have these machines be able to spend money with other machines for data. I mean, it's mind-blowing where this could go, right?
Oh, the wow. The other
aspect of mass adoption, which is hard for people in the United States to really appreciate, is how many people in the world do not have a bank account but have a smartphone. Right? There's huge populations in South America, in Africa, in India that do not have a banking relationship. Yet they might be doing a small business. They might have a little fruit stand somewhere, but there's no way they're going to get a credit card acceptance agreement with a bank. And their local currency might be so unstable, right? Devaluing all the time that they actually don't even want to transact in that. And so with a smartphone, they can have the access to digital money, whether it's Bitcoin, Ethereum, another cryptocurrency, and they have instant access to a banking system. And that is also, I mean, the numbers are astronomical there.
Now, when you look at these foreign countries in Africa and stuff like that, with the inflation of the currency, would a, like, I'm going to say a Bitcoin, but an electronic currency create stability for their marketplace as well?
It would, because they can instantly convert that to another currency of their choosing, whether it's US dollars or the euro or the yen. So they can get out of that currency, which is constantly devaluing, right? Some, in some cases by 100%, by others by 20%, but that's a significant amount. So even though we see volatility in Bitcoin versus the US dollar, the volatility is much lower for their, from their currency to Bitcoin. They're actually getting a less volatile asset, and certainly one that has potential to appreciate rather than always depreciate. And so that worldwide adoption is a big part of it too.
And the reason why I asked that question is I was working in South Africa in the late 80s, and I went to Zaire on a weekend. And when I left, we found out the ruler at that time changed the currency from a red script to a blue script, which means the red script was worthless and the blue script is where it was. So if they had cryptocurrency, it would have been a different story. But basically, there was a rioting and everything because nobody had any money. So, and it was his way to control things. But geez, those things would end.
Right. Absolutely.
Now let's talk a little bit about personal finance in crypto-based assets. I know you talked about, you know what, if your risk tolerance at 5 or 10%, quite frankly, I know one person who actually bought crypto at 100 and they're retired now and they actually got out when it was like 35,000 and he's worth tons and all that stuff. I mean, not everybody's that way. So what's the way people should really look about this? How should it be looked at in a personal finance realm, that type of thing?
Yeah. So the first thing is, this is a longer term play, right? I can't tell. No one can tell you where the price of Bitcoin will be in a month from now or 6 months from now, right? There are better studies that imply what the adoption cycle looks like, what it'll look like by the end of the decade, right? And so you have to have a five-year horizon. Otherwise, the quick buck is all about luck, right? But if you make a steady, you know, and one of my favorite scenarios really, and I'm sure you've spoken at length on this, is dollar cost averaging, right? Especially with an asset that's so volatile. I mean, you cannot tell me where this will be next month. So if I have $20,000 that I want to put towards Bitcoin in the next year, I can just say, okay, I'm going to buy it now. And I might regret it in 2 months, 3 months, or I might not. I might be a hero, right? And in 6 years, it probably doesn't make a difference whether I buy it at the high or the low of this year. But if I want to take some of that anxiety away from that, then allocate $1,500 a month, right? And just on the first of every month or the 10th of every month, just go buy it. And it's so easy to buy now. Whether, I mean, some of these apps like PayPal let you buy it in there. And so you can buy small increments. And then you're not worried about the timing risk. So it's really, you're building a position over time. You're not worried about, you get to buy more Bitcoin if it goes down. You buy less if it goes up. Over the course of the year, you're comfortable that you didn't panic and buy the top. You didn't, you know. So it's just an easier way to get into it. So that's one thought. It's really, you don't have to jump in with both feet all at once.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's wonderful because you get a better, you pay a lower cost for what you're getting. So as long as you're not really jumping in and out of it, you should have a higher value down the road, which is wonderful. And that's a great way to look at it. Now, when it comes to taxation on Bitcoin, is there, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of unique things there. Again, this obviously affects you if you're trading more than if you're just buying and holding. But crypto assets have been deemed property, not securities, for taxation purposes. And this gives you actually one very unique advantage. Let's say you bought Bitcoin at 50,000 last year, some, or 45,000 last year, right? And at the end of the year, it was lower. Let's just use 25,000 as a number. You could actually sell it, take a tax loss, and immediately buy it back. So with a stock, as you know, there's wash sale rules, which means that if you sell a stock at a loss, you can't buy it back for 30 days. Otherwise, they invalidate that sales transaction for tax purposes, right? But with property, there's no such thing as a wash sale. So if you do have the ill timing and you have a loss and you want to take a tax loss, you can do it and still buy right back in and still have the same position, but have to basically harvest that tax loss. So that's a great benefit. The big thing with crypto is that you have to do a really good job record keeping. The so-called exchanges do not issue 1099s. So it makes it harder if you're doing lots of transactions. And a lot of people that were heavily involved in this decentralized finance where they were earning yields off these different tokens and they were swapping them for different tokens have gotten themselves into trouble because of lack of record keeping and then getting that information together. Now, there's some great services out there. They're not cheap. That will take your wallet address and will track down all your prices and they'll give you all the reporting. And I personally use one of those services and our firm uses an actual auditing firm to do the same thing to track all those expenses. So it's very important that you disclose all your purchases and sales. The IRS does pay Coinbase and they do pay these other exchanges for that information. So that's important to know. This whole idea that the government doesn't see that, they do. So, they comply with the know your client anti-money laundering rules, right? To stay mm-hmm. the traces of the government. So the government has the information. You think you're not reporting it. If you don't even, there's that checkbox. Did you do any cryptocurrency transaction that's now on the tax mm-hmm. form? If you don't check that, they will eventually catch that. And so it's important to be tax compliant, even if it costs you a little bit.
Peter, thank you so much for being with us today. It's coming to the end of our time. This has been wonderful. If somebody wants to get in contact with your firm, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, best way is through our website, castlefunds.com. There's investor inquiry form that they can fill out there. And one of my colleagues would follow up with them. Absolutely. Information about all of our funds are on the website as well. We deal with accredited investors only. Mm-hmm. And we're fully regulated. We're a commodity pool operator here in the U.S. So we're registered with the National Futures Association and the CFTC.
That's wonderful. Everybody, if you're interested in getting in contact with Peter's firm, it's called Castle Funds now. I'm sorry, castlefunds.com. And again, Peter, thanks for being with us. This has been wonderful, very enlightening. And I'm really glad you made it easy for everybody to understand, especially me. All righty. Hey, have a good day. Thanks for being with us. Stay safe and stay healthy.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Peter Eberle of Castle Funds for being here. If you would like to get in contact with Peter at Castle Funds and his associates and talk about this, please go to castlefunds.com. And you know what? You want to stick with us. We're right back with some more information here on Saving with Steve.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Saving with Steve. My name is Steve Sexton. We just had Peter Eberle, Chief Investment Officer of Castle Funds. Wasn't he outstanding just sharing what's going on with the crypto industry, everything you need to know about what regulations, taxes, how you want to look at investing it and the whole shot. So that was outstanding. Now, it's important that we take a look at really what's going on with inflation. Up on the table, I've got it right here. We're showing the June report, okay, for inflation. And basically what we're seeing, hey, we're seeing a 3.3% increase in inflation. Okay. But what's really going on? If you look at the chart, you will see that energy has dropped by 16.7%. Energy commodities, 26%. Gasoline of all types, 26%. Fuel oil, 36%. Energy service, down 0.9%. Utility piped in gas, natural gas, 18.6%. And you use cars is down 5.2%. But everything else is up. That means food, whether you're buying it at the grocery store, eating out. That means new vehicles, apparel, medical care commodities, shelter, transportation services. Okay. Those are all up. But here's another thing you didn't realize. You remember when we talked about how all these fuel oils, gasoline, and all that's down significantly? Well, guess what? You've probably noticed at the pump in just recent days that your cost of gas has gone up, what, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 cents a gallon. Why did that happen? Well, 3 months ago, OPEC, Russia, reduced oil production by 1 million barrels a day. 2 months ago, they decreased it by another 1 million barrels a day. Now it's been decreased by 2.5 million barrels a day that they're not producing. Now, this is going to be a supply issue, a demand issue. You're going to see higher and higher demand for oil. Anything that's related, whether it be apparel, packaging, toilet paper, whatever, everything that uses a petroleum product is going to be affected by inflation. And as a result, you are likely going to see a further rate increase. Because of that rate increase, you're likely going to see higher interest rates on your credit card, loans, and whole set. So it's that contraction of the community. Now, on top of that, we have 180,000 jobs coming in here. So folks, this is an important thing to understand. 2021, inflation was up 7.7, 6.3 in 22. And here we are in 23, we're already up 3.3. So you almost have a 17, 18% increase in your cost of living altogether. It doesn't go down, it keeps going up. So it's important to take a look at where your budget is, how much you're spending. How can we do the same things with spending less by changing vendors, changing the way we look at getting our food, where we get our food, all those kind of things? But most importantly, if you're in that pre-retirement to retirement phase, you're likely going to see some issues with the market. And this would be a wonderful time now that stocks are way overvalued to look at taking some of your gains as opposed to, you know, not selling when your market's down because you realize the loss, but you also realize the gain higher. What a gift would that be? The most important takeaway from today is this. If you're looking at retirement, it's very important that you have a portion of your assets that have a purpose. What is that purpose? To maintain your lifestyle. Do you have assets that are doing that? Also, it's important to have assets that have performance, that they're going to grow. But sometimes that growth has a loss as opposed to a gain like we saw in 2022. It would be a shame if you had all of your assets focused on accumulation and growth and the market dropped another 20%. What would that do to you? It puts you in a position if you had a million at 800,000, but if you still had to take out $40,000 to support your lifestyle, now you have 760. See what's happening is you start selling off shares at a lower value, it makes you cannibalize and eat away at your principal, and then you got to pay taxes on it. The question is, how am I ever going to get back to where I was before? And many of you might be experiencing that right now. So it's very important that you look at that. And I just want to share this with you because this is really about making sure you get the most out of your money. And I want to thank you all here for joining us today on Saving with Steve. We'll look forward to seeing you next time. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.